Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
This is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
Just a quick one to start, Richard.
Yes. Yes.
I've written down relentless pursuit. And that's because I quite like, I like the phrase.
This is your new aftershave.
Do you know what? That's not a bad name for, you could see it at Christmas time, being quite an sort of atmospheric but slightly pointless advert, which you can't decipher the meaning of.
It's you. It's yeah. You and you're standing on a rooftop in Tokyo at night for no reason at all with a Kestrel on your hand.
Am I tossing car keys in the other hand?
Yes.
But staring into the middle distance, so I can't see that they're going to land in my hand or not. They might fall off.
Yeah, but you're so good. They hit the palm every time. But then for some reason, you've got a third hand that's just throwing petals into the street below.
Third hand.
and then the camera zooms into your face, into your eye, and goes straight into your pupil, and it goes dark, and then suddenly It's you, but you're standing in the middle of a wall of death with lots of bikes going all around.
Oh yeah, and I've got my hands aloft like the ringleader of a circus.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Ringleader? That's something different.
Ringleader? Yes.
Ringleader of a crime gang.
Have I got sort of what, like 10? Tattooed, bikinied ladies on highly modified Honda Cub 90s going around me on the drum of doom.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah? Yeah. Do you know what? That wasn't what I was going with it, where I was going with this.
You're wearing a long black leather coat.
Yeah, but it's open, and underneath I'm wearing really short tennis shorts. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. But again...
Chicago Bulls.
But
best.
I'm no...
You look like absolute shit, but that's not the point. I mean, it's a very
But I'm
arty
ripped. To
advert.
Be fair, because I'd known about this shoot for 9 months, I'm ripped, right? Because there's no way I would wear that stuff unless I was ripped. So,
fair enough.
Very ripped. Small tennis shorts, Chicago Bulls loosely fitting vest, like the one that you might have borrowed off your dad when you were young.
Yeah.
Not that my dad has ever worn a basketball vest, and a long leather Matrix-esque coat. They're actually really heavy,
very,
these coats.
Very loosely laced rigger boots for some reason as well. Like I said, you look like a state, but in that way where it's almost like, well, that must be cool.
Yeah,
because so no one would dress like that if they weren't cool, because it's unless they were like they just run into a charity shop and grab the first things they could find.
No, there was a fire drill, and you realise it was a drill, and you just had to get out.
Get my tennis shorts. Oh God, it's cold outside. I'll get my big long leather Matrix coat as well.
It's fire drill fashion. It could become a new thing. It's like you've got 20 seconds to get out of your bedroom. What are you going to put on?
And
it
might drill fashion.
Fire drill fashion, it could become a thing, right? You've just got to mix and match in seconds.
Well, you've got jeans on and
but no belt.
A pair of slip-on smart shoes and then a dressing gown over the top.
I'd have a barber jacket with bare chest underneath.
Yeah.
Because I'd be worried about sort of wind. I'd be worried it'd be a bit cold outside, but at the same time, it's a bit unbreathable. So you could just unzip it and you'd have just completely bare. It's a little bit.
And then you've only got boxer shorts on underneath, but then you have got a massive pair of Timberlands on your feet.
That's actually all-terrain wear in some ways. That will cope
some
with
ways,
a lot.
Yeah. I can't even remember what your aftershave's called now. What do you call it?
Relentless Pursuit.
Relentless Pursuit.
So the reason why I've said this is because there's been... The thing that you put on social media, I think it was last week, still, or the week before, actually, still has me giggling and howling, is the Rich Energy understeer footage that we've...
Oh, yes, that was... When was that?
It was ages ago.
Last week or whatever, yeah. But we forgot to talk... There's a couple of things that we forgot to talk about, and that was one of them that we should have mentioned last week was, William Story, the man, the face, the heavily bearded face of Rich Energy, in a car park at Silverstone.
Behind some seating?
Yeah, I think it was not a car park, is it? It's just an area where they put stands and things when there's a Grand Prix on.
Yeah.
Attempting, I think, to do a donut.
A really dismal donut. So he goes in hot, which is actually not the right way to do it.
Yeah.
You don't go in hot. And he's in a Jag XJ, isn't he? But quite an old one, I think.
It's, yeah.
It's a 2011 car or something?
I think it'd be pre that because it's a, for Jag nerds, it's an X350. So okay. Alley-bodied, but the trad-looking one.
Oh, that's it. And, yeah, yeah.
I ran the reg on the DVLA. Sorry, ran the reg. I'm trying to sound like I'm in the CIA. I checked the registration number against the DVLA database that you can, you know, anyone can do online. And it came up as a car that didn't exist. But then somebody on Twitter obviously has another source of reg checking. And it did come up, revealing that it's the V6.
Oh.
So okay. It's not even the powerful one. I mean, I thought it's not an R because it's got too much chrome and stuff on it.
Yeah, yeah.
But weirdly, on the clip, obviously it's shot on a phone, so it sort of sounds like you almost, I was like, is that a bit of it sound like there might have been a little bit of supercharger whir? And it's like, oh, maybe it's, you know, maybe it is an R that's just been dressed up a bit. But no, it's the V6. So
there's so
it's
much
not
unpacking
got a lot
to
of
do.
Power.
No.
And that's, I would say, you need to do a sort of car park donut. Ideally, you want a good slug of torque, don't you? And I remember that engine, the V6, not having...
No.
Huge amount of torque.
But I'd also suggest probably starting on full lock from standstill because it's the greatest chance you're going to get of a car like that to break away a little bit rather than going in fairly hot on concrete and dry gravel. The way the car shudders and just refuses.
It shudders, doesn't it?
Refuses.
It does that classic thing. Because obviously, as well, it's relatively softly sprung, Jag, yeah. And it's got a long wheelbase.
Yeah.
And so he tips it in. The front doesn't quite bite, nowhere near enough. But then it rolls and unloads the inside back wheel. There's no slippy diff. So then it just does that awful sort of wobbly shudder.
It does a shoulder dip. Yeah. Doesn't it?
But not like one of those sort of poetically beautiful shoulder dips, like a very talented footballer getting past two defenders. It's more like one of those ones where somebody's trying to make their way back through a restaurant where they've been to the loo.
And they're a bit
drunk.
They
see a waiter with a high tray and they're a bit pissed. They just kind of go, sort of drunk.
Honestly, it's made me giggle every day since I saw it on your Twitter thing.
I think I've watched it about 50 times. And do you know what? The first few times I watched it, I didn't have the sound on.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, this is hilarious. And then I watched it with the sound on, and there's the accidental hoot.
you catch the horn ring when you're mid-flail.
The horn.
Yeah.
It's too good.
It's... If you're listening and you're just wondering what on earth we're talking about, we will put the link to it for our Patreons.
But we'll put it everywhere. This one, I know William, normally we try and save the good stuff for the patron, but this one's been out there.
This needs to be out there, actually.
And yeah, I'll stick it on the socials everywhere because it's too funny.
The reason why I said Relentless Pursuit, because I thought, if you were on a pursuit for Relentless, the energy drink, you'd find it because it's on sale in quite a lot of places, as is Red Bull. Which we'll come on to. But if you wanted to, as we said before, we've done a video where you actually found a can and gave it to me. But
In fairness, I didn't find it. Our friend Alex Goy found that you could buy it off. I think he got it off Amazon where you can. Supposedly you can still buy it on Amazon, but then I saw somebody saying on social media that, in fact, now you can't get it on Amazon, which seems to mean you now can't get it anywhere.
Right,
because you can't get off Rich Energy's website.
You can't buy the drink from the drink's website.
Well, hang on. No, listen. In the let's be journalists.
Oh, hang on.
This.
Right,
let's
I'm going
just
on.
Check.
I'm on Amazon now. I'm not saying Amazon's the best place for this stuff, but it was the last place. Oh, hang on. Rich Energy. They have an Rich Energy store on Amazon.
Oh, they do, huh?
And you
because
can buy
on their website. It says website under construction.
Oh, does it? Well, hang on. If I click the Rich Energy store, I'm in it on Amazon. And you can get a case of 24 for $29.99. Or, yeah, so a case of 24 for 30 sheets. It says this is eligible for click and collect.
From where?
Well, that should we do it to try and collect?
So I think Alex gave me 4 or maybe 6 cans. We had a can when we were driving that Porsche 911 that time. And
yeah,
I think I still had 2 cans left. And my wife, when we were moving house, just went, do we have to bring these? And I was like, yes, because the one day they might be collector's items.
That's right.
And now I don't know where they've gone. I did keep them, but I don't know where they've gone. So I still have them. I've no intention of opening them because, as we know, it's not actually that nice. But
could we set one in? Could we set one in resin with a Smith & Sniff logo on it or something? I feel that could be one of those resin artists. My son watches a lot of resin art on YouTube, which is actually quite constructive, much better than listening to shouting twats talking about Minecraft. But
yes.
We could
go a bit Blue Peter in the 80s and create a time capsule.
That's a really good idea.
Things from the 2020s. And because, you know, in history, when history books look back at the early 2020s, it'll all be about COVID because it was such a dominating thing.
Yeah.
And I saw sort of some other sort of big headline stories, but rich energy probably won't be talked about. Relatively unimportant, but we could put a can of rich energy in a vape and some other shit in a box and bury it and then forget like squirrels where we've left it. I'm looking at the Rich Energy website, which is under construction. It is a bit desperate because then underneath it's got the email address for the sales department, and under that it says 250,000 classic cans in stock ready for sale. But then it just says all inquiries for orders, merchandise and product updates, please complete below and we'll get right back to you. And there's a little form. But the picture, this very minimalist website, is framed by 2 cans. One can of Rich Energy sugar-free and one of the classic, in inverted commas, cans, which is the black can. And they've cut out a picture of a can where the photo was obviously taken just in a room so you can see loads of light and things reflected in it, including, I think, the photographer.
You're joking.
Yeah, it's absolute amateur hour.
How can you do this? And I don't know, and the sort of like terrible understeering and stuff, and yet throw millions of pounds at race teams trying to peddle a product that you're not actively trying to peddle. That's where it's just so confusing to me.
It's, yes. There's a thing online, just came up last week, I think, an interview with the guy who owns that superbike team.
Yes.
Is it a superbike team?
It is a British OMG, superbike team.
OMG yeah. Racing, I think they're leading the championship at the moment, aren't they?
And they are.
He explains, it's really complicated, the situation, but ultimately he won't badmouth Mr. Beardy
Jack and Ori.
Understeer man, yeah, but he
Billy Jack and Ori. Sort of
Billy Jack and Ori, Billy tire scrub, and he sort of suggests that he's not, you know, he's like the sort of figurehead of this company, but actually has no, you know, I think the grown ups get on with the business side of it, but it's all a bit murky. Now there's a book coming out soon all about Rich Energy, and by Alanis King and Elizabeth Blackstock, 2 US journalists who they used to write for Jalopnik and various other places. But they've written this book all about Rich Energy's adventures in, I think, primarily around the F1 thing with Haas.
Okay.
I don't know how far, because they've been working on this book for a while, and then it's like this thing came up with the Superbike team like week before last, and I was just like, these two writers must just constantly have a headache about, God, what's he done now?
Yeah.
Because there's a point where they have to finish the book. I presume it is now finished and going to print because it's out quite soon. And the saga never stops.
No. Well, it's good for a volume 2.
I suppose so. Yeah, yeah. Which, anyway, I don't know. I honestly can't get my head around a lot of this Rich Energy general saga involving sponsorship, but also I think you've got to be quite careful because it's clearly still a developing story and who knows what's going on.
Well, can we actively invite William Story to drop us a line on Smith
if
and Smith,
he wants
maybe.
To.
I mean, we don't actually have guests on.
No, but we'd probably make an exception.
I'd probably make an exception if he wanted to come on and chat.
Who did we? We said, so hang on, we had someone a few weeks ago we said we'd make an exception for, didn't we? And I can't remember who it was.
Was it Gordon Murray? Might have been Gordon. If he can prove that he listens to the podcast, which rumour has it he does, but I don't know. We're probably a little bit heavy for him. Probably yes. It's a lighter podcast.
Could you lighten up, please, guys?
It's, that's why he really he probably likes really faint music, because if you turn the volume up too much, that's too heavy.
So yeah, the bass becomes too much.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's, if you're mates with Gordon Murray, is that sort of a little running gag you would have where you could walk into a room and go, hey, Gordon, lighten up, and he'd just like wink at you. He knows. He knows what you
will
mean.
He wink, or will it be the death glare? No, Gordon,
he's all right, isn't he? He's.
I've just been invited. Okay, so I've just been invited to play with him, so actually I mustn't say
have
that.
You?
I think, yeah, I've got an email.
Again?
Got an email last night. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to play with him in September. I'm not telling you any more than that, listeners.
No, I was going to say, what toys is he getting out of his special?
Wouldn't you like to know, Richard? You like to know? I'll tell you what. I'll tell you at the end of September, mate.
For the Gourdmeister.
I'll tell you what, I'm talking like this because I spent the last 24 hours driving around in electric trains here, didn't I? And I must have said folds and trains it, I don't know, 800 times.
Really?
I got very tired towards the end of the day because we're on a bit of a road trip in it yesterday. And actually, this video might be out by the time you're listening to this cast if I've got my act together. But, I must have said Ford and then transit non-stop for 2 minutes in different ways. To the point where the videographer just looked at me and just went, I think that's enough now.
Yeah.
Enough.
Are you having an episode?
Yeah, it was. It was like a strange an outburst of bad tics that you must you've got to stop.
Man. Like, do you remember when the MG3 came out? You know, the little hatchback MG, which I think you can still buy, in fact. But when that came out, the advertising campaign was all just around the word fun with an exclamation mark. Mm. And that was everything. All the marketing materials. Fun, the MG3, fun. And when I was driving it, I borrowed one when it first came out and I couldn't stop. Every time I was driving it, assuming I was on my own in the car, I just couldn't stop just going, fun, fun. And then I got bored of doing that and started going, fnuh! And I realised it was a tic. I developed some kind of weird, I couldn't stop doing it. As soon as I got out of the car, fine. Every time I got in, I was like, oh, I'm just going home now. See you everyone. Bye-bye. As I drove along. It's a shame, really. It was a nice little car, actually, weirdly.
How high can you say fun, just out of curiosity?
How high?
Yeah, how high?
Fun.
No, it needs to be higher.
I could probably go a little bit higher, but...
I'm thinking Barry Gibb from Bee Gees.
Fun! No, it's cracking.
Fun!
Fun! Fun!
Fun!
Oh, that was good.
I could do with it. I was thinking, perhaps for a festive special podcast, we should do some helium. Just some little chats and quotes, but with the use of helium. Could be something we could do.
Put that on the list. Talking of...
listen.
Things that we say... on this podcast that is sort of wearily familiar. I want to talk to you about the Range Rover Spoked.
Spoked.
Because I would say the Range Rover Spoked is generally not an old money car.
No.
Full-size Range Rover like I've got
can
be old money. After all, Her Majesty the Queen has got one.
That's right.
And she's got it in dark green... clear glass, and it's sort of quite old, which I think is always a good measure of old money. Don't have a new.
You don't have to have the latest thing, but
absolutely not.
And she has a spare wheel cover, which is a slightly UV damaged cluster of corgis. You know, it's always a UV damaged. So the corgis are slightly blue, and you're like, why are they blue?
There's a car down the road from me that's got one of those. You know those. I'm going to get the shape wrong. Basically, it's a square that's been tilted on its side. So a diamond, but there's probably another name, isn't it? Anyway, let's say a diamond shape.
Is it a rhombus?
Is it a rhombus? I wanted to say rhombus, but I feel like that's wrong. bus. But you know the ones that's got a sucker pad on it, so you can sucker it to the side window and or the back, and often they would say, like, baby on board or something like that.
Yeah.
And this one says Jack Russell on board. And it's got a picture of a Jack Russell dog. But I was thinking, I'd absolutely love it if it just said Jack Russell on board, and then it's got a picture of a sort of kindly faced old man.
Well, the cricketer that doesn't wash.
Yeah.
Isn't
it? Yeah. But he's on board.
I think he does wash. I'm just joking. But he is called Jack Russell. Actually, I think he's still alive. I'm saying that. I don't know. But I do know that he wears the same jumper. And it's parallelogram.
Yeah. Parallelogram, yes.
I think so. So two parallel lines, obviously, and then a slant.
All the lines are parallel.
And then the verticals are slanted.
But it's symmetrical. It's not like the Renault logo.
Yeah.
Which is also a parallelogram, I'd say. Someone will write in about this. There's probably some...
I should know. I used to be quite good at my... Rhombus is a diamond. I think rhombus is a diamond.
All right. Well, anyway, it's one of those.
Don't you want to keep talking about them?
Not really. What I was going to tell you about is the Range Rover Spalt that I saw, which I think... is the first old money Range Rover Sport I've ever seen. And let me talk you through it. I was standing in a shop waiting to be served, and I looked out the window and it had just pulled up at some lights outside. First generation Spalt. So nice and old.
Yeah.
That's good. Dark green. It was absolutely immaculate. Like, the paint was just beautiful. So cared for as well.
Okay.
Beautifully cared for car. Clear glass. A rare thing to see on that car.
Very much so.
And because it was clear glass, it gave me a good view of the interior, which had cream leather seats. Again, they looked so immaculate. You could see the immaculateness. And the occupants were two very spry-looking, grey-haired people, couple.
Oh.
And they just looked sort of... And they just looked sort of, you know, hearty and healthy... in that way that being able to afford really good food.
Yes, I was just about to say, so financially comfortable, but they're not overtly rich.
Yeah, and it was the TDV8 I noticed as they drove on. So, you know, not they'd spent some money on it. I presume they'd had it since new. The condition suggested so. But I just thought...
That is that could be the first old money Spalt.
Maybe the very tall, hefty, very old gateposts of their house don't permit easy ingress and egress of a full-size Range Rover. So they've sort of been falsed into the spokes, and they've just had to make do and make it as tasteful as possible. Not very big alloys on it either. Not the smallest, but sort of medium size. So it looked okay, but it didn't have like full sort of, you know, showy, offy wheels on it. I just thought, that's interesting.
That is interesting.
I don't think I've ever seen one in that spec before. It looked good. I mean, I have to admit, I kind of went, oh, it's nice, isn't it? But, there we go. So
there's an old money motor which goes past my house periodically, but I'm never in a position where I see it stopped so I could put a note on it. And I've never seen the person out of the car, so I can't really kind of talk to them. But they must live fairly close by.
Mm.
And it is, I've got to get this right now, it's the last of the boxy-shaped Volvos, which did they badge them? It's a saloon, and is it a 9 series? But they badged it something else towards the end of its life.
Right towards the end of its life, it was the S90.
That's right. So it's badged. I thought you were going to say, I knew it was an S something. So it's badged as an S90, but it is just a sort of 80s-looking boxy 9 series Volvo.
Yeah.
However... crucially, it's burgundy wine coloured.
Ooh.
And it's in really good condition. Two, it has a small badge bar, because you know they've got a fairly shallow grill, haven't they, those ones from memory?
Yes.
Quite a shallow grill. It's got a badge bar on it, which is probably, I'm putting my fingers up like I'm showing you what size trout I caught the weekend. I'm saying it's about a 10-inch wide badge bar, chrome. And it has had an old AA badge on it and another badge, which it keeps going by too quickly. I can't work out what it is. But it's and also there is, of course, a Panama hat on the parcel shelf, which, as you know, is the sign of a well-cared-for vehicle.
Yes.
By a person of a certain type.
Yes.
And I do like the Panama hat, I have to say. I don't wear one, but I like seeing one on the shelf because it instantly draws me in and I think, I'm just going to quickly have a quick look around this car without looking dodgy. I'm not scoping it to nick it. I'm just having a little a courtesy glance. But this guy's got that, and I desperately want to have a chat about this car because it's one of those ones which if you ever wanted to buy a car, you'd be like, yeah. I need to buy that S90. That is the last of the old guard.
Yeah. That'll have the straight six.
It does have the straight six because I can hear it when it goes by. Ooh. And it's probably never done more than 55 miles an hour because it just slinks by. And it looks
great.
That
car has not been over 2,500 revs in its life.
No. It's great, and I want it. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're an older man with a wine-coloured S90
Classic, wine colour as well is so perfect.
It really is.
Wine for my wife.
And you know he uses very old-fashioned, quite difficult to get out of the tin turtle wax. You know the stuff that I mean? Or myrrh. Myrrh.
I think, or maybe he's got a bit of tea cut, but like in a metal tin still.
Oh, shit,
one of those.
Yeah, he's one of them. It's beautiful. These people are the perfect exercise in not upcycling as such, but not mending and make do so much, but buying a vehicle knowing full well it's got to last for 15 plus years.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we need to return to.
Yeah, well, Volvo used to be... I mean, there's that story, which I've never managed to track it down, so I haven't been able to put it in one of my boring books, I think, but that when Volvo were about to launch the 850, or it was getting close to production after about 10-odd years of development, they suddenly panicked that you know, they'd gone all radical with front-wheel drive and things like that, and that it wasn't durable enough. And they signed off improved materials for certain parts of the car that cost them like 50 quid per car extra, which is a lot. And you're going to make, you know, 100,000 cars a year or something. Mm. That's a chunk of money you've just knocked off your profits. But they were so paranoid that it wouldn't be Volvo durable and wouldn't last for 15, 20 years without effort that they overcompensated in the early days. And that's fantastic. I've been doing a bit of reading up on this because I have this, I mean, you know, particularly all the stuff that's in the news about, you know, the climate and it becoming fuck hot recently in this country.
Yes, that's true.
You know, and I had these pangs of guilt about driving around in a supercharged Range Rover. But
I don't know what that's all about.
You know, but in fairness, I don't do many miles, and I was trying to. So, you know, but there's all this thing about, well, is it better to keep a 12-year-old car going rather than buying a new car?
Yes,
and the sort of carbon costs of all these things, and it you can cut this so many different ways, and depending on where you go, you get different figures. But it seems like I'd have to drive my car based on average figures, so it's all a bit vague, but let's assume that it gives you some kind of ballpark. I'd have to drive my car for another 40,000 miles to release the same amount of CO2 as having a new car made. And that's assuming just a sort of medium-sized ordinary car, not anything with batteries, as far as I can work out. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, as you say, it is a bit of a kind of... a box of frogs. You've got the wheel-to-well argument.
Mm.
You've got the argument where it's about localised air quality versus emissions globally from a factory or otherwise, and what's more important. And that's what people are saying with EVs. Oh, well, you know, it's all very well. There's no exhaust and stuff. But, like, how are you charging it? Are you charging it using coal? If so, it's just billowing smoke somewhere else away from your house. Mm. Well, I do sort of understand that. But I suppose, you've got to start somewhere. And ideally, you want to start from both ends and work into the middle. But, I mean, supercharged Range Rover, Richard, I don't know what to say. Apart from that, should I drive my Dodge more? Although I looked at the prices of fuel again, and even though my tariff of electricity's gone up, which is where I charge my car most of the time, has gone up, definitely. My bills have gone up. Nowhere near what the cost per litre of dirty E10 is. The fuel line rotting mess that it seems to have become. Case in point, my Beetle, I went to take it to a show at the weekend with my kids. bastard thing wouldn't start for the first time in years and years.
Years?
Bearing in mind, I have gone through the entire fuel system in that car in the last 12 months. Every single part that fuel passes through is new, like new. And I can't get fuel from the front, where the fuel tank lives, to the back. The fuel pump, the diaphragm of the fuel pump's wanked again, and I've rebuilt the fuel pump with all new parts. It's like, come on, throw
my
bone.
So what? It's the E10 has frigged your diaphragm?
I can't blame it directly on E10 without proof right now, but I'm at the angry stage where I'm just annoyed at the fact that I've got to go... Well, I've got to go back in and look at all the things I've already taken off and rebuilt on that car, and yet... I left that car in 2004 and it started in 2012 with nothing more than half a can of fresh fuel. And you're like, oh, damn. And now I've rebuilt it and I've worshipped it and it's thanked me by just not delivering fuel to the carburetor. So I've got to, I'm going to blame it on
E10. Yeah, do.
You could blame it on the boogie, though. Let's face it.
As long as you're not bringing the moonlight or the good times into it, I think that's a legitimate complaint.
We're talking of moonlight. Actually, that was one of the things I was going to bring up at the start, which I hadn't mentioned the other week when I said I went on holiday. I was explaining to the kids about the moon's gravitational pull affecting the tides and all that. And the kids were blown away.
In a way, the moon acts like a mass damper for the Earth, affecting the tides.
It does, doesn't it, mate? I've got to say, it's quite impressive. But So I was explaining all that, and we were going in the sea regularly. And I've just bought a brand new wetsuit after lots of research. Okay, I've unfortunately can't fit in the one that I bought when I was 16. So even though it's still in really good nick, so I've done a lot of research, and I bought this wetsuit, and it uses some recycled materials. It was a nice wetsuit. Okay, emphasis on the was. I went for a slightly thicker one, 5mm in the torso, 4mm in the arms and all that, so I can use it in like autumn if I wanted. And I unwrapped it on holiday. I put it on and I went in the sea with the kids. And as we were going down to the sea, that we went to this little beach, which is hard to get to. And there was no one there apart from a chap and his girlfriend who were walking down at the same time as us with a dog. He was quite chatty, and I think he recognised me off fifth gear or something. But anyway, bit of polite chat.
Hello, mate.
They were on the beach.
Do I know you from fifth gear or something?
Yes. And I went, no, you don't. And I carried on swearing at the kids.
What's the late break show, you shit?
Yeah, exactly. Screw you guys. And they went and lay on the beach and chilled. We went in the sea to swim with snorkelling and stuff.
Yeah.
After about half an hour of enjoying it and me admiring the fact that my choice of wetsuit was superb. My son wanted to go into the shallows a bit, so we swam into the shallows a bit, but I stayed out there, and the guy's dog just decided to come and like greet us. It was a collie. It was an intelligent dog, and it ran up to the shoreline and then just went into the water and started paddling out to us. Well, it paddled past my son and past my daughter to the deeper bit where I was, and I, as it came towards me, I could see in its eyes it got a bit of a panic on.
Oh, no.
Because it thought, A, I don't know who you are, and B, I am so out of my depth, I'm in a bit of a sticky situation. So it basically clambered onto me. I'm laughing now. I really wasn't. And it tried to climb up me like I was a rock in the ocean. And...
hang on, a collie, a big shaggy collie, not a border collie, like a collie,
sheepdog,
like a
collie.
Lassie collie.
No, a sheepdoggy collie, so black and white.
A border
thing.
Collie, yeah,
yeah,
okay.
You know, intelligent one of those intelligent.
Yeah,
dogs.
Yeah, they're smart. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I don't hate dogs. I'm not a dog hater. I don't own a dog, but I don't hate them. I just sort of, you know, I'm a bit finicky.
You're a bit dog agnostic, though, aren't you?
They annoy me easily.
They annoy me easily. I've got one.
Well, that's why I wouldn't have one. Because I would be worried that it would annoy me easily.
You just accept the annoyance because of the other side, which is that they're very loving and nice.
Yeah, but it licks its own poo and other dogs vomit and then licks your face in the morning. I'm out at that point. Anyway, so So I've got this dog.
You now have a sheep.
I've got a dog. I've got a sheep dog. Upon a cool looking dog, and I can tell it's obviously gone up to me, and as it started scrabbling, I've just hugged it because I thought I'll tread water and I'm going to hug it so it realizes that it's safe. Because otherwise it's just going to keep flailing. And I thought, at the time, I thought, bloody hell, its claws are quite... It's got quite sharp claws. I forget. I mean, dogs have got quite strong claws, haven't they? But you don't realise until it's sort of trying to climb up you in the sea. Yeah. So, anyway, I thought, I'll swim back in with it because it's in a state of panic. The guy by this point had got up and was calling it back. So the dog went back. The dog went back.
But hang on. Did it cross your mind to do like you always see on those posters that you're supposed to rescue a person from the water by cupping them under the chin?
Oh,
did you think about doing that?
No, I didn't do a chin cup. No.
Okay, no, I don't think it would work with a dog. I think the dog.
Luckily, I had goggles on or a mask, so I could. As we got a bit shallower, I could dip my head under and sort of raise the dog up a bit. You know, like Lady of the Lake spec.
But where is the dog? Like, are you doing front crawl or something, and the dog is on your back?
No, it's in front of me, and I'm holding it. I'm cradling it in my arms, and I'm doing strong breaststroke legs.
You're like bodyguarding the dog.
Yeah, because I can breathe. I'm holding my breath a bit and dipping my head under. I'm holding the dog aloft like it's a gift to the Aztec gods. Yeah?
Right, I get you. But so, they're quite big dogs, aren't they? It's like 20 kilos or something that you're lofting there.
Well, yeah, tell me about it. Yeah, and you know, daddy's not in shape right now. So anyway, I get the dog to the shore and the dog manages to get hold of some grip on the land and off it goes.
Yeah.
And I climb out of the sea and the bloke's walking up the beach and he didn't actually apologise to me, but I just sort of went, oh, it's all right. But this is before I'd looked down. I looked down and it's torn my wetsuit in four places.
Oh, my God.
It looks like a really mild shark attack.
Bloody hell.
But to the point where I might have said something extremely rude in front of my kids. I went, this wetsuit's 2 hours old. It's 2 hours old. My last wetsuit I bought when I was 16, and it still is in good condition, albeit it doesn't quite fit me anymore. And it's like, I invested in a new wetsuit after... I'm sure you're like this sometimes. You research things quite heavily, and then you're very pleased with the final decision.
Yeah.
Based upon various parameters. And that's where I was at. And now I look at it, I go, I've got to try and get this professionally repaired. I've got a huge flap torn down on the chest and one on the shoulder. It looks like I've had a kestrel on my flipping shoulder. And then another one sort of by the kidneys, just because I got treated as like a rock in an ocean by a collie.
I wouldn't have guessed that a dog's claws could tear through a wetsuit.
Me too, especially 5 mil.
Not, 5 mil.
Not happy. Hashtag not happy. So,
did you not say to the dog owners, excuse me, I saved your dog's life and you owe me a wetsuit?
The kids said that. They said, "Why, Daddy, why didn't you say something to us?" I was so like, the dog wasn't, it's not like we were out in the open shipping lane. We hadn't gone that far. It was just, it's one of those beaches. Oh,
shit. There's an Akranoplan coming. Get the dog.
It was one of those beaches that goes deep quickly. So you don't have to be far out to be out of your depth fully.
Yeah, I fear those.
Do you? Well, it's a nice beach. And it's near Slapton Sands where they did a D-Day trial that went very badly wrong, but because it's same profile as the Normandy beach, I think. I didn't say anything to him, and he's a nice guy, and I'm sure the dog's lovely. The dog seemed lovely. It wasn't the dog that woke me up a couple of days previous to that, which I opened the curtains and looked down at the beautiful beach where we were staying, and there was a dog actually barking at the sea. So imagine how long it barked for when it was stood on the beach.
Well, the sea's not going away, is it?
The sea's going nowhere.
The kind of fuckwitted thing my dog would do.
Yeah, I couldn't bear it. I tried to go back to sleep and it was like, you absolute...
I think when we went to the Gower Peninsula the week, my dog did bark at the sea at one point.
Stop it.
The thing is, the sea makes her so happy. It's a delightful thing to see.
So it's a happy bark.
That's the thing. She just gets overexcited. She just gets overexcited. She hasn't seen the sea for a while. She just goes tearing down the beach and then she'll just dive into the sea and sort of splash about a bit. And then it's almost like it just overwhelms her and she just starts barking at the sea because she's a dickhead, but it's sweet in a way.
Sweet,
this is what
sweet,
I mean about
see.
Dogs. You see, they're annoying, but they're also sweet. You're just sort of, I mean, you know, just like hairy children, really.
Yeah, I suppose it is like children. Yeah, it is just like children.
Speaking of Volvos, well, a couple of things. Well, I looked up to see if there's any of those old school S90s for sale. There's one on Autotrader for, well, I won't tell you. First of all, I'll tell you, it's an S90 Executive / Royal Level 2.
What?
Which means it's 15 centimetres longer. It's the long wheelbase one. It's got a sort of slight stretch of the back doors to give more rear leg room.
Oh, yes, because it looks like kind of local mayor specification.
It's exactly that. It's full local mayor.
Oh, I love that. Local mayor.
He's got a bit busy with the budget and treated himself to an S90 Executive in 1997. This car looks amazing. It's green. Again, it's sort of kind of good old money spec in that it's dark green with a cream leather interior. It looks immaculate. It's been basically, I think, restored because it's had a respray. It's had all sorts of new parts on it, according to the description. But the upshot is it's up for £11,900.
What?
I know.
It's not much, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I know that in the native Sweden, box Volvos have gone up in value and continue to do so because they represent a certain era and...
Yeah,
like I mean, so I quite like it. You know, young people think that they're pretty cool, and we've talked about this before. Obviously, you can go big to turbo power on them and stuff like that.
Mm.
Turbo brick hashtag. But I wouldn't pay 11. I don't think I'd pay 11 for one. I'm hoping this guy who keeps driving past my house, who's probably lives in a massive manor about 2 miles away that I haven't seen yet.
Yeah,
I'm hoping I'll flag him down one day I'll make up an excuse like, oh, I just heard it sounded like a loud wheel bearing, just wanted to check that you were all right. And he'll go, do you know what, I've been thinking of getting rid of this, do you want it for £600? And I buy it at the side of the road outside my house. I go, yeah, go on then, that sounds great. What's your name? Is it Reginald? Yeah, okay. Yeah, hi, I'm Johnny. So yeah, I'm thinking that's what might be the best scenario there. But I've never owned one. It's the weird thing. I've owned the 262 Bertone, and I don't think I've ever owned any. Oh, no, a Volvo 340. But I've never owned a 7 or a 9. My parents have had an 850 T5.
Yeah,
I'm light on the Volvo.
I always find that surprising somehow because it's quite a racy car for parents. But I guess,
well, I bought it for them. That's why.
Ah. Okay.
See, they didn't know they were getting it.
Yeah. So, actually, talking of Volvos, the other thing I was going to say is we had some friends to stay the other day, and they drove over from London in their fairly new XC90.
Oh.
And they're about 10 minutes from our house when they rang up and went, we've got a puncture.
Oh.
And it's a big, like the tyres split.
It's a tear.
So we've just pulled into a petrol station and it won't, you know, we can't get any air back into the tyre. It's just knackered. But we don't know what to do, whether to just leave the car here. And I was like, is there a spare in the boot? Yeah, I think there is a spare. We can see a spare.
There's not. Is there a spare?
But we don't really know. Well, it's a space saver, as it turns out.
Oh, okay, well, that's better than...
I said, look, you're 10 minutes away. I'll just come down and I can change it, because they're both going... like. So our friend Lauren, whose car it is, she says, I've never had a puncture in, like, 20-odd years of driving. And her husband, who is Swedish, in fact, so I assumed he wanted the Volvo, but he doesn't drive, so actually he doesn't really care.
Oh.
But they're both like, we've never changed a tyre before. I was like, fine, I'll come down. I'm in the car, I'm on my way. So I drove down there, and... I don't know whether anyone listening has ever tried to get the locking wheel nut off a modern Volvo, but they have that style where it's a patterned outer nut.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So what looks like... First of all, it has plastic covers over all the nuts, and Volvo give you in the boot a pair of tweezers to pull them off.
Yeah, they're deeply annoying, but they are annoying.
Annoying, but that was the least of it. Because I looked at it and went, what the hell's going on here? Oh, I see. Yeah, they've got covers on. Fine, I get that. And then it looks like underneath you've got just, you know, 5 normal wheel nuts. But one of them is effectively a falsie. And the way in which you get grip on it is you use the key, you know, the locking nut key, which has an outer pattern thing that's supposed to fit into it. But they're both incredibly shallow.
They are.
If someone's slightly over-torqued...
It rounds it. You're doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't get it to shift. And I was like, I'm going to fuck this if I keep trying to... bludgeon it off. And it was raining, of course it was, at this point.
Yeah.
So
The shallowness is key to this, because you just can't get enough purchase.
So
I don't know, because I spent an entire day trying to get one of the locking wheel nuts off my Honda Insight, which was...
Are they that type?
They're that type. And in the end, I had to use a specialist, and we pretty much had to drill into it and smash it off, or kind of like grind it off. Oh, yeah, it took a whole day, an absolute full day, to get one wheel off a car to access the job I was actually needing to do. So it's a complete Canterbury tale.
It's infuriating, isn't it? Because I can't think I've ever owned a car that's had that type. I've always had the ones with the pins, effectively. And they're no good either.
They're cack.
I mean, they're easily knackered. But this seemed to be particularly, on a brand new car, this seemed to be particularly cock-assed. And in the end, they just had to ring Volvo Assist and get someone to come out. And the guy, he ended up with a fucking dog. Sparking, it's probably sparking.
Do you know what the dog's barking at? It's barking. It's just seen a Volvo S90 classic go by.
Listen,
is your dog trained? Because you know you can train dogs to find truffles and, I don't know, find drugs. Could you train your dog to find old money cars? Because that would be... We could take the dog on a really fruitful walk.
Just release her into the countryside and
she'd just
come back. She's quite strong, our dog. She could probably... I don't think she could drag a Volvo S90 back, but...
I bet she could. She's a big dog. As long as it was on a very flat surface with, I don't know, at least 35 PSI in each tyre.
What is she shouting at? She do not understand.
Being a flip.
Unless it really is. She's like, quick, get down here. It's metallic green. You love it. Anyway, just absolutely cock-assed locking wheel nut shenanigans. It's just really, really frustrating.
I feel the pain there, but also it's the complexity of modern cars. You've got a car that's heavier than old cars, even big old cars, you know, a lot. So jacking it up with a very spindly jack, which looks like the leg of a crane fly, is always, I think, a bit sketchy. Things that don't undo, so complicated nut saga, don't want that. And then sometimes you're greeted with the fact there isn't a spare wheel because you haven't ticked it on an options box, which is a whole new conversation itself. Do you actually option a car with a spare wheel, or should all of that just be banned and a car should have a space saver again, as was? I don't mind a space saver. It gets you home. It's a real wheel with a real tyre on it, so I'm all right with that.
It's still better than gunk, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still better than gunk. I mean, of course, gunk doesn't work if you've torn the arse out of the tyre. It's no side wall at all.
No, I know, because I think it's just going to squirt gunk everywhere. I don't... Now, here's the other thing. There's a little sort of epilogue to this story, is that...
guys.
Our friends then, the following morning, had to ring around and try and find a replacement tyre, because they didn't fancy driving down the M4 on a space saver. Mm. And it's one of those tyres that is model specific.
Oh, gosh.
So it's not just in stock everywhere, because it is a particular size and rating and everything. What was it? I can't remember what make they were. Pirellis, I think. And it's for the XC90. And she did find one in stock at a quick fit, but only after ringing around a few places, because it's not necessarily an off-the-shelf tyre. I had this once with a Fiesta ST that I had as a long-termer, and it turned out the tyres on those, I got a puncture, and the tyres on those were only fitted to certain Mini Coopers and the Fiesta ST.
Oh.
So it wasn't totally model-specific, but it was near as damn it.
So boring, isn't it?
It's just, it's weird, isn't it? It's like tyres have now become like other sort of major parts of the car, where they are bespoke to the car, where once it was just like...
Well, it was shared with and loads of other cars. It is. It's a complete cluster. But it must be tough for all the tyre people, because they can't stock everything. Otherwise, they'd have warehouses the size of, I don't know, Cardington airship sheds. So it's bonkers. It's absolutely bonkers. Bonkers. Oh! I wrote the only thing I have written down, and I've ignored it for 3 weeks now, because I believe the Commonwealth Games has just started.
Last week started in Birmingham, didn't it?
Yeah, all underway, and so athletics is in the news and all that. And all that. Sebastian Coe.
Yes.
Sir, is it Sir? He is a Sir.
Lord Sebastian.
Yeah, Coe. Every time I see Sebastian Coe and I the surname, when you go on Instagram and, you know, it suggests things that you might like, for weeks, this was a while back, it kept suggesting Coes to me. And I didn't realise what Coes were, because I thought, oh, what's going on here? I haven't searched for Coes, or not knowingly. It stands for cab over engine. Did you know this?
Oh, no.
So if you search for, like, sort of Coe trucks, like classic trucks and a lot of the American stuff, the real nice sort of 50s weird stuff.
Yeah.
They class them as Coes. So you can have, like, whole custom Coe. Yeah, I didn't know this either, because I'd obviously seen a few and maybe liked a picture or two. And the Alan Garithm has chased me and gone, oh, you might want a bit of this. And so I keep thinking of Sebastian cab over engine now. So I'm thinking, does Lord cab over engine, is he going to turn? Because, you know, he did an amazing thing with the 2012 Olympics, which is bloody 10 years ago. Well,
wow.
Is terrifying. Does he tool around in a very, very specific type of truck which requires late turning into every junction? He does a very late turner.
You've really got to get your eye in with one of those if you're not used to it, haven't you?
Oh, very, very much so. You turn, it's a second later than a normal, or 2 seconds later than a normal person would turn, just so you don't clip the back end as you go round.
But what about a coach? You know, some of those coaches that have very long front overhang and you're sitting right at the front.
Oh, awful. Awful.
I wonder what the road legal vehicle with the longest distance between driver and front wheels, but where the driver is in front of those front wheels. I wonder what it is. It must be some old coach or something.
Well, you remember those Mercedes SLR bespoke carriers that they made in the 50s,
are
probably the prettiest car transporter ever. I'm just going to quickly look them up, because they were, I think they only made like three of them, and one of them exists.
But you're right. It was an
incredible looking thing.
But the driver did sit many, many feet in front of the front wheels.
Oh, feet. I mean, silly.
I mean, it would have. Do you know what, though? That kind of style would have been very compatible with poor quality sat-nav, because there's that thing, you know, you go, am I supposed to turn here? Is it here? Oh, it is here! Oh, God! And then, but you'd have been fine.
Of course. Yes, that's right.
The point at which the nav went, no, it is here, you're supposed to turn, you'd have been going, oh, well, I have physically passed the turning, but that's okay, because my front wheels haven't yet, and now I'll turn.
That's right. It is the Mercedes 300 SLR transporter for the things like the Mille Miglia, where it was you were so forward of the front wheels. I mean, honestly, you are Euro NCAP. Your entire body is Euro NCAP. Sebastian Coe would be, he might have the money to buy one of those.
I bet he does.
Yeah, I bet he does, actually.
Do you remember the day to day, the spoof news show, Chris Morris, from the 90s. Excellent show, one of my favourite shows of all time. And there was a bit in that where Chris Morris is sort of Paxman-like news anchor, is interviewing in the studio a woman who's raising money for charity by selling jam. And then the gag is that he starts off just as a friendly chat, but then he turns on the full blast of, like, the aggressive political interviewer style and starts giving her a really hard time. And at one point she goes, well, but we've got celebrities donating jam. What celebrities? We've got Sebastian Coe. I hate Sebastian Coe! And this makes me laugh. And it also used to make TV's Jeremy Clarkson laugh. And we had this mutual appreciation of the day-to-day when we were writing Top Gear. We'd often just do lines from the day-to-day to amuse ourselves.
Well, that I can see that. I can very much see that.
So a few months ago, Jeremy was at a party and he saw Sebastian Coe across the room. And he made a beeline for him so he could have a selfie with Sebastian Coe so that he could send it to me just because of that joke from the day to day. And Sebastian Coe had no idea why Jeremy Clarkson was so keen to have a photo with him.
I was going to say, because I bet Jeremy doesn't ask for photos with people very often. He's not that guy, is he?
No, because he has it happen to him all the time, and so he's just not that person. I don't think he's ever, that I'm aware of, asked to have a photo with any celebrity, because that would be weird, and because he's a celebrity himself. But yeah, he had a selfie with Sebastian Coe purely because of an ongoing joke that
maybe you could ask him, does the fascination also spread to could maybe Coe, if he was a cab over engine enthusiast, then there could be a newfound respect for the Coe.
I always feel like those cab over engine things, that they're very hot after a while.
Oh shit, yeah. Well, I had just, a Comma camper van, and it was very hot and sweaty, and also terrifyingly slow and low geared.
Well, that's it. So you're working the engine hard, it's getting very hot, and you've got that, ooh, it's just, don't touch that. Don't touch that. It gets very hot.
Oh yeah. Oh. Or especially if you're sat, I mean, it's okay if you're at sort of, if you're getting air passing through the system, as it were, but if you're sat in a hot kind of summer holiday traffic standstill, the thing's just cooking and sweating, isn't it? It's very unhappy under there. Yeah,
exactly.
Very. I mean, the ultimate inboard engine in modern cars is that unkillable Toyota, isn't it? The people carrier, which we talked about.
Oh, the Previa, yeah.
The Prev. Yeah, yeah. It's so far in there. It's. I mean, you can take bits off it while you're driving it right next to you.
If only it had...
You could change the air filter. You could change the air filter whilst you're going around the North Circular in London.
Oh, shit.
You just go, I've serviced it on the way to work.
If only it had... Do you remember that? Those VM Motori, those Italian diesel engines that were fitted to various cars, Rover 800 and Range Rovers and things. And they had separate heads for each cylinder.
Yes, that's right.
So you could do a little bit of a head rebuild while driving.
Oh, yeah, you could accept that the compression would be down
gloves.
A bit. And you need some
they were
heat-proof
not the smoothest,
gloves.
Not the smoothest anyway. So if anyone could retrofit a Previa with a VM Motori diesel engine that has separate heads, then you could do lots of running repairs while you were literally running.
That's a great idea.
Well, is it?
No, it's a terrible idea. you know lorries, trucks, when you see the cab moving around separate to the to the chassis because it's on those lovely gas shocks.
Yeah,
and,
I like
it
that.
Looks like a...
Yeah.
I like that as well, but it really reminds me of when people pick up hens or chickens and move them around and the head stays dead still, but the body can be doing anything. And I also like it when they accelerate hard in those trucks, the sort of cab rears up, a bit like a water slosh situation if you've got, I don't know, a paddling pool in the boot of a Volvo, and you clutch kick it a bit, and of course you get that massive surge of water, and then you have to ride that wave. And my dad said the other day, this was when I was down there after we'd seen the guy with the arse falling out of his shorts, he said to me, oh, have you ever seen a lorry transporting trout? And I went, no. And he said, oh, well, because I know why it was, because we were on that trail and it's quite close to a trout farm. Mm. And he said, oh, I've seen a lorry go by before that was transporting live trout. Oh, I said, that's awesome. How on earth do they do that? Because it must be so heavy.
So heavy.
With all the water.
Well, I suppose, fuel tankers, they're carrying a large quantity of fuid. It is doable, isn't it? But
that's true. Fuel and also, what's the things that put out fires?
Fire engine.
those as well.
Is it possible your memory is getting even worse?
Oh, I fear that. I do fear that. I should really do things that stimulate the mind, like Sudoku.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be a name of a car soon.
Oh, well, now, look, we should Sudoku. Bring this to a close. I was going to say, I had a whole thing I want to talk to you about car names, but I'll save it till next week. It's not time specific. So, but yes, Sudoku, the Toyota Sudoku.
Toyota Sudoku would work, but it might be Japanese market only. And then one of us will stumble on it and then try and bring it over, and there'll be a couple about. Like the Toyota Will, which still looks like the strangest vehicle in the world.
It's strange, isn't it?
Looks like, I don't know, sort of Picasso opium smoking Yaris. But I'm now obsessed with cab over engine, that Mercedes SLR transporter. Apparently, it was a one-off.
Oh, was it? It still exists, doesn't it?
It does. Merck, I think, restored it or recreated it. It might have been destroyed, and then they might. But it could fully laden. It could do 105 miles an hour.
What?
So just think about that in the mid 50s. And the driver is about, I don't know, 4 feet in front of the front steering axle, and you're doing 100 with a race car on the back.
Christ alive.
Yeah. Well, terrifying. Terrifying. Yeah, especially if you were sort of, I don't know, suddenly fumbling around for the cigarette lighter in the footwell and got a bit into a speed weave situation. Do you call them speed weaves? I don't know, it sounds like a sort of Eddie Jordan hairstyle, but yeah.
All right, well, anyway, we better start looking for the exit on this one. Before we go, however,
listen,
I have three things to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The My Mate Rach Show, in which Johnny travels the world meeting people who have a friend or acquaintance called Rachel.
This is just getting ridiculous.
If that's not up your street, there's, of course, The Late Break Show, which has many excellent videos about cars and vans. There's a 20 electric vid.
Soon,
we don't know yet. Second thing I've got to tell you is that we have merch. We have T-shirts, we have mugs, we have stickers. Go to thelatebreakshow.com, look for the merch shop and follow the Smith & Sniff link to see many beautiful bounties that you can buy to show your appreciation of this podcast. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that if you are familiar with the Apple Watch, you'll know you can have a Mickey Mouse face that pays tribute to those old Mickey Mouse watches of the 80s. But what's amazing is that on the Apple Watch, Mickey's foot taps each second. But because of the way that those watches work, and it's all synchronized to a central time clock, every single foot on every single Apple Watch with Mickey Mouse on it in the world is tapping at the same time.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, actually, I looked this up. That's not actually strictly true. Apparently, there are sort of millisecond variations, but the eye, they're below the point at which the eye can actually appreciate the difference. Supposedly.
Bloody hell. Okay.
Yeah. So
I think there's something underlyingly creepy about Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
But we probably shouldn't go into that.
Yes.
And the fact that people really sort of believe in people dressed up as Mickey Mouse at Disney, again, another layer of just terror, creepiness.
I'm glad it's not just me that thinks there's something off about Mickey Mouse.
Oh, there's something definitely off about him. I mean, come on.
I think it might be because he slightly reminds me of Michael Jackson, but it's the high voice.
Well, he sounds like Michael Jackson. Yeah, he definitely sounds like the Jackson.
Anyway, look, let's not go down this avenue.
No, we can't.
Action, but instead, just say thank you very much for listening. We'll be doing this all again the same time next week. But until then, goodbye.
Bye now. Smith & Sniff, proudly sponsored by Richard Energy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.